You're listening to A Light at the Other Side, where we're sharing stories of resilience, healing, and hope. We share the experiences of adoptees, domestic violence survivors, military veterans, and more, so some episodes may contain potentially triggering accounts of trauma. To fully appreciate the light, we must sometimes peer into the dark. Happiness and the lies we tell ourselves. If one were to scroll through the Facebook groups I'm a member of, one may think I'm a bit indecisive, or perhaps I just don't know what I want out of life. I'm in homesteading groups, homeschooling groups, and also in urban exploring groups. I like homesteading, but I don't own 3 dozen chickens or call myself a trad wife. When did we become such a culture of such extremes? In our current paradigm, for most of us, we leave our homes many times before the sun rises, and the children go to schools where they're stuck in cinder block buildings being trained to think and behave according to bells, tests, and sometimes unrealistic expectations. Critical thinking, discussion, and debate are largely gone from the educational sphere. They memorize facts and figures to regurgitate on a test at the end of the school year. Meanwhile, adults go to work 8 or more hours a day at jobs they largely don't like to earn enough money to pay for the steadily rising cost of simply existing. When we all get home at night, we're exhausted and snippy. We may eat dinner around the table together, or in some families, sit on the couch and watch TV. We're so burned out from demanding interactions all day that we can't even face our own family members without being irritable, short-tempered, and rude. We've given the best we have all day to others, coworkers and bosses who wouldn't blink twice when firing and replacing us. And by the time we get home, we have nothing left in the emotional and mental reserve for our closest loved ones, our spouses, children, and other immediate family members. We tidy our homes, the ones we leave all day to pay for, then shower and collapse into bed only to do it all again the next day. But the rigor involved in making a different life for yourself is beyond most people. To even begin to change what life looks like for your family means saving a ton of money, sacrificing countless creature comforts in the meantime, to do something like buying a plot of land and building off the grid, doing all the research and work involved to homeschool your children, ensuring they're meeting all their academic goals while also signing them up for social opportunities so they get that interaction as well. Making your food from scratch is possible, but requires tons of work and time. Having a robust garden to feed your family fresh organic food is possible, but it requires tons of work and time. The point is, you can choose a different life, but it requires so much work to shift your life in that direction that many people don't do it or simply don't have the capacity after doing all their daily tasks to simply keep their life running. And then there's the question of motive. Why are you changing your lifestyle? Do you believe that living in a way where you opt out or even partially opt out of general society will bring you vastly more happiness? How do you define happiness? Is it having the latest gadgets, a large, beautiful home, pretty hair and nails, nice clothes, nice car? Then figure out how to achieve those things for you and yours. Is your idea of happiness living with a more essentials-only material life, but spending more time with your children and family, quiet evenings at home instead of dining out at fancy places, going camping rather than 5-star hotels? Then chase that dream, but please don't think it's going to be any easier. There was a meme in a homeschooling group. I don't entirely agree with it. The meme reads, "The idea that our society is best served when all family members separate in the morning to do things they generally don't enjoy could be the biggest fallacy ever imprinted on humanity." Many people would say being forced to stay home all day with their family would be hell for them. Social interaction fuels them, drives them, and brings them happiness. Thus, the young adults who choose to leave the Amish and other restrictive communities. If being more of a homebody is your jam, that's cool. But I wouldn't presume that your entire family automatically feels the same way. People going out into their communities every day, working and learning and interacting and co-creating, also is a beautiful and valuable part of our society. Not everyone goes to work in a gray factory doing drudgery all day. And as far as doing things they don't enjoy, whoever gave us the idea that we will enjoy everything, every day, for the rest of our lives? That's absurd. Doing things we don't enjoy makes doing things we do enjoy that much more precious. Not many people get to fill their days entirely doing things they enjoy, and the ones that do quite quickly lose their grip on sanity and reality. Look at celebrities who end up getting everything they've ever dreamed of. How many of them overdose and die? Because it turned out getting everything they ever desired didn't make them fulfilled or happy. It somehow made them even more miserable. I do think the happy place in the middle needs to be addressed because it's basically non-existent. We are either working non-stop to pay for the life we have now or working non-stop in an off-the-grid lifestyle. How do you enjoy your family when you're working 65 hours a week to pay for the necessities of life? How would you go on vacation if your entire homestead runs off your own manpower? I'm getting weary of seeing homesteading sold as a key to a life of freedom. A rural, unconnected lifestyle is just as hard as an urban one, if not harder. There isn't really such a thing as a day off when you have livestock, large gardens, etc. Your reward for that effort is freedom from some societal expectations, more time with your family, the ease of mind that comes with knowing where your food comes from, and the self-reliance that provides safety in case of societal collapse. A more traditional, 20th century and beyond, lifestyle means a secure income, not having to farm and forage for your food, the ability to pay for more items of physical comfort and convenience, and the option to earn paid vacations, weekends, holidays, and other time off. A day spent just sleeping in, not to mention an extended vacation, is a possibility, whereas it may not be a reality if you ran your own homestead. Of course, your largely processed urban food source may very well be killing you slowly, and if things go south in the entirety of your society, especially with the food source, your family's survival could be at risk. There are questions only you can answer. Are you prepared to provide for your family if the existing paradigm of our society changes drastically within your lifetime? Are you concerned with the quality of food you're feeding your family? Are you willing to give up paid time off and regular pay in exchange for the freedom of working in blue jeans on your own property every day? Do you actually believe societal collapse is imminent? What values do you feel are most important to pass down to your children? Would you rather leave your children a large sum of money and possibly property, but little to no life skills, or life skills for self-sufficiency and really no tangible property or wealth of any worth? I find myself quite in the middle of all of these. I have homeschooled each of my children for a few years during their educational journey. They've also gone to public schools. I believe it's important to gain valuable homesteading skills like canning and jarring foods, baking bread, growing vegetables, and raising chickens, but I don't believe I must live like that full time so long as we live in an urban environment. If push comes to shove, I can most definitely feed our family with those skills, but I don't see the need in doing them all the time if it's not necessary. That's my balance. The relentless pursuit of happy. I just think we need to be especially cautious in assuming that if we drastically change our lifestyle, happiness will automatically be just around the bend. Happiness is a mindset, not a destination, nor is it one that necessarily needs to be top priority every minute of every day. That's hedonism. Getting shots makes my daughter unhappy, but she needs vaccinations, so she will get shots. She will be temporarily unhappy, but not as unhappy as she would be if she contracted measles, which is now inexplicably a thing again in America. Temporary discomfort for long-term gain is an insanely valuable feeling to get used to. If you can't remember the last time you were happy, change something. If you can't remember the last time you were unhappy, check on the people around you and see how your happiness is impacting them, because most likely someone else is sacrificing theirs for yours, and you probably need to change something. Life isn't intended to be a pursuit of happiness, but rather a pursuit of coming to balance, balancing your wishes and wants with the wishes and wants of your immediate family or those who share your life, balancing self with society, balancing short-term actions with long-term results, and finding your happy middle. And this will look incredibly different for each and every one of us. Is happiness freedom? We live in this society of absolutes. If you want to have some chickens and make your own bread, before you realize it, you've bought 3 acres in the middle of nowhere and find yourself on a legit homestead, but now you can't take a day off because who will feed the chickens and the goat, much less make the food for the family that day? If you want the lifestyle of an Insta influencer, you end up overextending yourself to buy a posh house in the nice neighborhood and enrolling your kids in an expensive private school, and you find yourself trapped in a stressful job to keep paying for that lifestyle you've chosen. You buy $100 Stanley cups and you don't even know why. I think the best we can do is try to make decisions to keep ourselves from being too trapped. I used to want that homestead life, but as I'm getting a bit older and stiffer and more achy, do I want to be cutting firewood and mucking out a chicken coop when I'm 65? Probably not, honestly. Likewise, do I want to max out our mortgage budget and buy a pricey fancy house so that we'll need to continue working a feverish pace for the next 30 years to make the payments on it? No, I definitely don't want that either. I want a little taste of freedom. But that doesn't matter because our society is set up to limit that freedom as much as humanly possible. Ironic, huh? In the land of the free. We can't opt out of anything, really. Even if you live off the grid on your own land, you better make enough currency throughout the year to pay the property taxes, or guess what? That's not your land anymore. There's no place and no lifestyle that's truly free. We sacrifice freedom for infrastructure, drinkable water, police and fire services, traversable freeways and bridges, and public schools. Overall, we've all agreed that this is acceptable. Where you personally live along the spectrum of freedom is entirely up to you, but don't be disillusioned into believing that any one set of decisions is going to unilaterally bring you boundless happiness, nor should that be the goal. Well, this all sounds dismal. Where does that leave us? Where we find ourselves is in a tricky place. If we're honest with ourselves, most of us fall for at least some version of the okey-doke. Homesteaders find themselves suckered into buying $1,000 water filtration systems, $500 industrial mixers, and $600 wheat mills to grind fresh wheat berries into flour so they can make loaves of bread worth $28 each after all those equipment expenses, when they could purchase an all-organic whole-grain bread for $6 a loaf at the local market. We really whack ourselves in the face with it sometimes. Urban dwellers can fall for the traps of spending thousands to maintain a perfectly green and manicured lawn of a non-local grass variety that requires constant babying to survive, much less thrive, in their quarter-acre lot, needing to redecorate in the latest trends every single year, and having to keep up with the Joneses. Urban apartment dwellers have to go to the farmer's market to get a fresh tomato, while a homesteader needs to merely walk in their backyard. Homesteaders have to plan an entire trip to take their kids to a museum, orchestra, or concert, while urban dwellers just hop on the light rail or car and head on over. You see where I'm going. There simply is no perfect place or lifestyle that is guaranteed to bring happiness. I read a study once about the happiest nations. And while Scandinavian countries were largely represented, there was a bit of disagreement around the word happiness. Most of the citizens interviewed interpreted or corrected this term to contentment, which is, of course, a different thing. What many successful developed nations have come to understand is that in sacrificing some things for the overall good, as I mentioned earlier, we sacrifice total freedom in exchange for societal infrastructure. Our overall quality of life improves, and we are content. Many citizens in Europe and other developed nations will tell you that, yes, they do pay a 45% tax rate or more, and yet are overall pretty pleased because in exchange for that financial investment, they receive universal health care, free university, and very modern advanced infrastructure, including perks like high-speed rail and a general sense of safety. Perhaps part of the reason so many of us in America struggle with feeling happy or content is that we are not receiving an equitable return for our investments in our government. We pay taxes and they disappear into the void, while we also pay outrageous amounts for healthcare, college, and additional security systems for our homes, or bulletproof backpacks for our kids to feel marginally safe. And that's all aside from the additional taxes we're constantly paying,
not only income, but sales, property, investment. It goes on and on. Whether you're a homesteader or an exposed brick loft urban dweller, you're working hard, following the rules of our society, paying taxes, and not receiving adequate returns. You're frustrated, and you see some highly edited, scripted, and posed pictures and videos depicting some kind of idyllic lifestyle drastically different than your own, and you begin to believe that if you switched up your whole life and changed to that, you'd finally have a grasp on happiness. Perhaps we've been sold this lie that we unilaterally deserve and can achieve a lifestyle of happiness when that in and of itself is pure and utter malarkey. No one is owed happiness, and no one can buy happiness. You can't work your fingers to the bone and eventually earn happiness. Happiness is like a butterfly in the wind, something that comes and goes organically and unpredictably through our lifetime. Contentment, however, can be accomplished with enough realism and commitment, and contentment can provide a fertile breeding ground for consistent, recurring happiness. Contentment is found when you accept that what you have is enough. The clothing you have and can afford, the home you can comfortably afford, the lifestyle that provides you both what you need to survive and also time with your loved ones, the acceptance of your lot in life is where contentment is born. Contentment is found in balance. Strive to achieve balance, and you'll most likely discover that contentment and happiness come with the package. Another aspect of life in those European nations is that they have a much different lifestyle than Americans. Their homes are smaller and simpler. They have a fraction of the material possessions that most Americans do. They find contentment more easily because they are not, as a rule, continually lusting after what they don't have and filling their homes to the brim with stuff. They've figured out that working 8 hours a day, 4 days a week, is amply sufficient to provide what they need and some things they want, not everything. They've learned restraint. They've learned, in short, that contentment is where it's at. As my husband and I face some decisions about the next 3 to 5 years of our life, we are facing these issues head on. What do we want and what do we need? We are not in a place in our lives to run off to the mountains, buy a cabin, and remove ourselves from the rat race. Likewise, we aren't going to stretch up and get over our heads by buying a home in the neighborhood and enrolling our daughter at the most exclusive private school. We're seeking balance. We're focusing on what is truly most important to us and making those ideals our guidelines, not whatever society is telling us those guidelines should be. This society does not have a track record of doling out happiness. Why are we allowing it to dictate so much of our lives? A smaller house is in our future, a smaller budget, and with it, more time together as a family, not just having snippy dinners late at night, but being kind, patient, and moving at a pace that allows for more loving and genuine human interactions. When I'm thinking of what values I want to pass down to my children, a few key ones come to the forefront. I want them to understand that the way they make people feel is way more important and long-lasting than anything they can buy them. I want them to understand that hard work is important and valuable up to the crest of exploitation. If you feel exploited, leave and go where your labor is valued, or face the reality that you need to acquire more valuable skills or get better at what you do. I want them to understand that life isn't always going to be fun, pleasant, or kind, but if something is routinely miserable, unpleasant, or harsh, make changes to improve your situation. I want them to understand that money does not equal happiness, but being fiscally prudent can bring contentment, which again is the breeding ground for happiness. Contentment feels like not having unpaid bills hanging over your head and having a little emergency stash and savings. In other words, $1 million in the bank won't guarantee happiness, but $5,000 may assure contentment. I want them to understand that they don't need every gadget, shirt, piece of jewelry, or car they see online. And if they want it, they need to figure out how to make that lifestyle a reality. There's nothing wrong with being wealthy. It becomes unhealthy when pursuing wealth becomes an obsession and ruins all of your relationships. Likewise, wealth is not inherently permanent. If a core value of theirs includes money, how will they cope if the stock market crashes or their business flops and they lose it all? Can they handle the impermanence of a luxurious lifestyle and the stress of maintaining or rebuilding it? I want them to deeply understand that the human relationships in their lives come first, and the best ones weather many storms if they are nurtured. Someone who loves you will love you rich or poor so long as you respect them and your relationship. Choose those relationships wisely. A bad relationship can ruin your life more than anything financial. I want them to understand that no corporation, company, boss, or workplace will ever care about them like their family does. So do not hand over your power to any of them. Do not hand over your power as a consumer to every company that advertises incessantly to you. Do not hand power over to a boss who will fire and replace you before you can blink and utter why. And do not hand over power to a partner or friend who is not kind and supportive of you. We each have power within our choices and can leave or refrain from engaging with situations that don't serve us. I want them to understand that life is so much more than money. In a time where the gulf between the haves and the have-nots seems to be widening by the day here in America, we must reframe our positions, our futures, and our goals and desires in the face of a future that none of us could have predicted or planned for. You don't necessarily need a tiny house in a field, but you probably don't need a 6-bedroom house in a pricey suburb either. Maybe part, not all, of the problem driving the extinction of the middle class is that some of those firmly in the middle class want to be wealthy so bad they are drowning themselves cosplaying as just that. We must yank our eyes away from the Insta feed, the constant advertisements, the reels and videos and TikToks showing us highly edited and unrealistic versions of lives we never even contemplated for ourselves, and focus back on our own desires and how we can realistically achieve something more sustainable and attainable. Many of our grandparents built solid, happy lives and families in 1,200 square foot homes where siblings shared rooms, the sole television sat in the den, and a modest garden graced a corner of the yard. Many of my older friends recall those childhoods with warmth and fondness. It's like they didn't notice they didn't each have their own room and their family lived frugally. Do we need 3,000 square foot homes and all the utilities required to run them? Is that what's most fiscally prudent for us and most sustainable for the environment? When can we collectively admit that we may be partially to blame for our own suffering and we can take definitive steps to address it? The lie that we deserve a huge house with all the newest gadgets and devices, well, it's killing us. It's killing our economy. Yes, I know that systemic capitalist corruption is the largest driving factor in killing our economy, but we can also take individual responsibility where it's appropriate. The companies are cranking out the stuff, but we're buying it. Maybe if we stop buying non-essential stuff, maybe if we downsized our homes and our footprints, maybe if we made conscious decisions to ignore the ads and save our money, then maybe we could regain some of the power back from the corporate overlords. I'm at a place in my life where cheap thrills and the constant pursuit of what some call happiness bore me, and I've been building a life of different pursuits. The pursuit of family first, primarily, and making a home that serves us, not a bunch of random companies. Eschewing the superlative nonsense and keeping control over our money is one of our highest goals for the next couple of years. A life of contentment is my goal. And when happiness flits through, I plan to have the space and bandwidth to fully experience and appreciate it.